Good morning, folks. Welcome to this Monday morning edition of My Car Guru. I want to give you a scenario, or as some people say, a scenario, for you to think about. Imagine that you went down to the Roadrunner Market and you bought a lottery ticket and you won the Powerball lottery, and $300 million was now yours minus the taxes. And so you're sitting around thinking about all the stuff you're going to buy, and you just all of a sudden decide, hey, I know what I would like to buy. I'm going to buy one of them Ferraris. So you do some searching. You do a Google search and find out where the Ferrari dealer is, and you see there's one in Charlotte. You see there's one in Atlanta, and you say, you know, I think I'll go to Atlanta. I want to try out that OK Cafe that Lenny Lawson told me about. So you go to the OK Cafe, and then you go to the Ferrari dealership, and you walk in, and there's this real Frenchy-looking guy standing there, and he says, may I help you? And you say, yes, I want to buy a Ferrari. Well, he looks you over and says, are you sure? And you say, yes, I just won the lottery, Powerball, and I'm $300 million richer. He says, well, I'm sorry, but I can't sell you a Ferrari. And you say, how come? And he says, well, you can't buy a Ferrari unless you already own a Ferrari. And you say, well, if I already owned one, I wouldn't have to buy one. And he says, yes, but you can't buy one unless you own one. So now you're either thinking, has Lenny Lawson lost his mind? Or you're thinking, okay, what's the deal here? Is this real? And the answer is, yes, it is real. You know, you can't walk into a Ferrari dealership, I don't care if you won $1 billion at the Powerball drawing, unless you own a Ferrari. Ferrari dictates who buys their cars, and especially if it's one of their limited edition models. Recently, Jay Leno was talking about that on his Jay Leno's Garage. He's got an amazing collection, if you've ever seen any of his episodes of Jay Leno's Garage, or his restoration blog is fascinating. He really does. He's a real car guy. I just love Jay. But, you know, Ferrari sold 11,155 cars in 2021. Now, think about that. Ford sold about 800,000 F-150s. So they don't sell a lot of cars, and they can be kind of choosy, and they are. If the car has a prancing horse on it, which is their logo, it is a very exclusive opportunity, especially when it comes to buying a new one. You have to literally have some type of history with the Ferrari company, or you won't be able to buy a Ferrari. It doesn't matter, like I say, who you know. And well, I mean, if you know the president of Ferrari, maybe you can pull some strings and get something done. So how do people get in to that? Well, they have to buy an old one. You know, you buy a used one somewhere, and then you buy another one and another one. You build up this portfolio, and then they recognize you as a Ferrari aficionado. There have been several movie stars recently that have tried to trick up their Ferraris, and Ferrari, when I say trick it up, I mean changing the wheels and fancy paint schemes and stuff like that. And you would think that because they own the car, they would be able to do whatever they want to it. But when they bought the car, they signed an agreement with Ferrari that they, in fact, would not do extreme modifications to the cars. So Ferrari sues people like that. Now, these movie stars and people like that have a lot of money, and they're not worried about being sued. But literally, they do get sued. They are forced to either sell the car or back to Ferrari, or to change the car back, you know, the way it was. Now, other exotic car makers like McLaren, Porsche, they're not like that. They're not snooty like Ferrari is. But just so, okay, the only reason I'm saying this is just in case somebody out there in this listening audience may win the lottery and want to go out and buy a Ferrari. Well, my recommendation would be to not do that. Just come to Gateway and buy a new Mustang. Well, it may not be the same thing, but or try to buy a Ford GT. Now, the Ford GT is the same deal. You know, that car is very limited. They build, you know, about 100, 125 of those a year. And it's an exclusive club. In order to get the first Ford GT or the first series, you had to provide a video of your car collection. and talk about, you know, you had to basically convince the decision makers whether you were entitled to this car. Now, one of the reasons why they would do that is because they knew it was going to be a very scarce automobile, so and that it would rapidly appreciate in value. Case in point, people have paid the $500,000 or so price to get a basic Ford GT. Yeah, there's a Ford with a six-cylinder engine that cost $500,000. They sign an agreement to not sell the car for 2 years, and then when the car comes on the market, the cars are worth anywhere between $1.8 and $3 million. So Ford knew this and knows this, and they want the right people that can spread the gospel of the Ford Motor Company, I guess, and the value of owning a Ford GT among the other powerful and elite people. So it is a different world that those people live in, the ones that can buy Ferraris and Ford GTs, and the rest of us are just going to have to enjoy our lives with our Broncos and Mustangs and things like that. And you know what? That's just fine by me. So let's take our first break, and I'll be back here in just a minute. I came across something kind of interesting the other day in an issue of Car and Driver magazine, and you know, I love music. I play music. I enjoy, musical instruments. I enjoy listening to not really hard rock, but occasionally, you know, I'll crank something up. Usually it's kind of mellow, kind of like 98.5 WTFM or The Bridge on satellite, Sirius satellite. Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Now, I have noticed in the last couple years that the sound quality, I think it's often referred to as the fidelity of the sound system, has really started sounding better on satellite radio than it did like 4 or 5 years ago. Like my new F-150, I think it only has 19 speakers in it. You know, it's, I don't know how I get by with so few speakers in my truck, but it really sounds like they're right there. Now, how does that happen? How do they tune these sound systems that are on these different cars? I mean, there's so many different makers. You know, you see a lot of cars have Bose sound systems in them. Lincoln uses Revell, which I'd never heard of. You know, some companies use Panasonic, Sony. You know, of course, they brand them differently. But Harman Kardon is another one. I can't really think of many others off the top of my head, but anyway, it's funny to find out that all of them use basically the same playlist in order to tune their systems and in order to be able to see and analyze the performance of their systems. So for example, sound engineers at Bose have a playlist with certain tracks, and it's used by other companies as well. They use it to test the stereos because any kind of stereo system needs to be versatile. They need to be able to handle a lot of different songs representing a variety of sounds and recording techniques to make sure that the new systems can recreate a song with the same depth of the original recording. Now, some of you may just listen to me, talk radio, that kind of stuff all the time, and it does, and the way the music sounds doesn't matter to you. But to those of us that it does matter to, I guess we can appreciate these engineers who work so hard to do this. So what songs actually are they listening to in order to be able to analyze a sound system? Well, interesting to see, there's a group called the Holly Cole Trio, and they sang a song called "I Can See Clearly Now." Do you remember that? Well, that is a very important song for testing the fidelity of certain sound systems. Bruno Mars actually made the list with his song 24K Magic. A group called Winterplay plays a song called "Billie Jean." Now, I don't know if that's the same one that Michael Jackson did. They should have used that one as well. Tom Petty is on this playlist with a song called "Learning to Fly Live." Now, to talk about the way they analyze this. They say the crowd starts singing along and Petty's voice drops out. And if the system is done right, you get a real sense of how big the auditorium is. If not, it tends to collapse and you lose that giant space. You know, I've never thought of that as being something that I could hear, but you can. another one is Dave Brubeck Quartet. Now, I've heard of him and the quartet. There's a song called Take Five. But on that particular recording, they're listening for the cymbals in the intro. Cymbals, apparently, are very hard to record and reproduce. And this particular track has a very nice natural sound with excellent instrument spacing, so they can pick out those sounds. Steely Dan is another group on this playlist, just because of the different sounds that the recording makes. Let's see who else is on this list. Some Straight No Chaser, never heard of them, on a song called Homeward Bound, but it's a cappella. And the voices span all the way across the stage, and you can independently hear each person singing if you have the right kind of system. So I don't know if your ears pick up that kind of nuance. I know that a lot of it can't be heard unless you crank it up. And when I do that, my wife says, do you think that's loud enough? So anyway, you can't please everybody, right? All right, so if you are in the market for a new car, you may have found that you can't find one like what you want. So I'll just buy a used one. Not a bad strategy a few years ago. The new car shortage has had some very interesting impacts on the cost of used vehicles, as we've talked about. There's a lot of popular models that are in such short supply that people are paying more for lightly used vehicles than a brand new one. Here are some examples. How about a Hyundai Accent? The average price for a new Hyundai Accent, you know, it's one of those few cars that are well under $20,000, $17,930 for a new Hyundai Accent. I guess that's the base price. Average use price, $19,940. The difference, 11.2%. Well, I hope you don't want a Toyota Sienna, especially a used one. An average new price is just over $45,000. Average use price right now is $50,261. That's another 11%. That's 11.2 as well. My math skills are amazing. GMC Yukon, you know, that's the big, well, that's like the alternative to the Chevrolet Tahoe or Suburban. The average price new, $72,998. That's a pretty cheap Yukon. The average price used is $8,000 more than that. Even a Kia, goodness. Kia Rio, average price new, $17,881, probably a direct competitor, almost probably the twin to the Hyundai. And the average price new, $17,881, average price used, $19,900. You know, I mean, if you got to have a car, what's the big deal? Just pay it, you know? I mean, that's just where we live. If you want one of those hot Kia Tellurides, I think the only reason people buy that thing is because they like saying the word Telluride. That's just my opinion. Average price new, $45,924. Average price used, $55,476. It's $10,000 more for a used one. That's kind of sad. Toyota Tacoma, average price new, $37,000. Average price used, $41,000. And the Chevy Suburban is really up there. Average price new, $70,000. Average price used, $80,560. That's a big difference. And then you get to the Ford Bronco Sport, not the Bronco. This is the Sport. Average price new, $35,184. Average price used, $40,000. Now, the big Bronco, or the, you know, the full size Bronco, first edition. These were the ones that were the first 7,500. People that registered for the Ford Bronco to get one, they qualified for the first edition model. And I just talked to a good friend of mine that works at Harper's, Porsche and they sell Jag and something else at that particular dealership, but it's the Porsche store in Knoxville. And he said, Lenny, we've traded for two first editions. Now, these are vehicles that list price new is around $64,000-$65,000. That's window sticker. So, you know, if the people that traded those in, of course, they bought them new. If they traded them in, if they bought it new, they probably paid MSRP for it, I would assume, or close. I don't know where they bought them. If they bought it from Gateway, it would have been probably MSRP. So they traded it in, a $65,000 vehicle. Harper's gave them $90,000 for the vehicles. Now, this is a dealer putting that much money in a used Bronco. They sold them for $99,900. Now, that's just what's going on with the Ford Bronco. We got some notifications this week. Had a customer that has one ordered with us. We have 74 Broncos ordered. And this one lady had gotten a notice last week that her Bronco had fallen into production and she could anticipate getting it by the end of February. Well, she was so excited. Then she got an email saying, whoops, we don't have enough chips, so it's going to be late May before it comes in. And that's just sad, but it's not getting any better. The chip shortage is absolutely not relieving itself. That's a weird way to say that. I was looking at the value of the Corvette that I bought, 2022 3LT package with the Z51. And most of that means nothing to any of you. But that's a pretty loaded up Corvette. And retail price on the vehicle was $88,000. Retail price on Kelley Blue Book, extra clean value, is $136,075. Is that not crazy? But it's not just new cars, folks. It's old cars, too. I'm looking at the, this 1970 Ford Bronco that I bought probably, I'm thinking, 10 years ago now. I paid $17,000 for it. Now mine's not a Concours edition. Mine's an excellent original vehicle. And that value, according to Hagerty, is $91,800 and is anticipated to go up 42% in the coming year. Now, who knows what's going to happen, but can you imagine $17,000 to $91,000 and you're saying, sell it? But, I probably should, but I just can't. I just like it. I like looking at it. I like having it in my garage. I like the thought of giving it, passing it on down generations. I mean, it's a 70 model. It's only got 36,000 miles. It's got plenty of life. But you look at that thing and say, that's not a $100,000 vehicle. No way. But that's how crazy the market is right now. So that's the world we live in, and we'll be back here in just a minute. This past Friday was an auspicious day. It was actually 100 years to the day that Lincoln came into the ownership of Ford. See, you all thought that Ford, Lincoln's always been a part of Ford, didn't you? Well, it was. Lincoln was actually established in 1917 by Henry Leland, who earlier had established Cadillac. And he had established it from what was left over of the original Henry Ford Company. It was the car company formed by Henry Ford prior to his establishment of Ford. I know that sounds a little bit confusing, but the original business of Lincoln was building V-12 Liberty aircraft engines during the closing years of the First World War. After the war, Lincoln decided, well, you know, we've got this factory and we've got these engines. Let's start building cars. And they started with what was called the L series, often referred to as the Model L, in 1920. But Lincoln didn't find much luck with the L series in the recession that happened. And eventually, Henry Ford, with the encouragement of his wife, Clara, and his son, Edsel, purchased the company from Leland for $8 million. And Edsel would largely run the company from the time of the acquisition of it until he died in 1943. But after its purchase by Ford, Lincoln would continue to build the L series. They made some modifications with the help of Edsel. They had a number of coach builders. See, back in those days, basically the factory, Ford or Cadillac or Packard or Cord, you know, there's just so many, Duesenberg, they would build the chassis, which included the tires and the wheels and the frame and the engine and the radiator. And then the rest of the vehicle would be built by a coach builder, a separate company. I don't know if you remember, but, you know, when you open the door on a Chevrolet or a Buick or something, right there on the plate as you go into the door said Body by Fisher. And because Fisher was a coach builder originally. Matter of fact, their logo was a coach, you know, something pulled by horses. Now, custom coach-built bodies were not just the realm of American car companies. I mean, this is done in Europe as well. Like, for example, you may see a Zagato body, for example, on a Maserati or something. Like Maserati builds the engine and the chassis and all that, and then Zagato designed the body. So there are all kinds of, or you may have heard of Pininfarina, and that's another body company in Italy. So, you know, these are, it's a different world now. I mean, now we have suppliers that build vehicles, that build all the components of the vehicles, and then they are assembled by Ford or GM or Honda or whatever. I mean, they don't make hardly anything, or the manufacturer doesn't. They just assemble products that are made by other people. It used to be the other way around. I liked it the way it used to be. Oh, well. We're in this for the long run. So, folks, if I can help you in any way, give me a call, Lenny Lawson, at 552-2020. And I guess I will see you tomorrow on the next edition of My Car Guru.